ever been the first at something? So how many of you have ever been the first at something? What? You did something before, being in softball before your sister. Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Somebody else. The first at something. Yes. The first child. That's my favorite one. I like it. So, whoever is the first at something, whatever it is, you get the ability to set the standard for how it's going to be. That can be a good thing or it can be a bad thing, but either way, you get to set the standard. So if you're the first child that comes out, your parents naturally assume that the second one is going to be exactly the same when it comes to, like, raising them. Like, legitimately, you will hear parents conversate and they'll be like, well, the first one wasn't like this. Like, that's the way the conversation goes. So you get to set this thing up. In our lives, spiritually, we have a bunch of different firsts we get to go through, right? Salvation. How many of you ever been, you know, saved before? And got saved again? And again? And again? And again? And again? Okay? Okay? First time you got baptized? First time you got baptized? Anybody? Okay. First time you went to camp? See, these things happen. Each one of them ends up being a different step, another step bigger down the road, down the journey. And sometimes we'll look back and notice the difference that they had in our walk with Jesus. Sometimes it's like, dang, I've really slipped up since then. As we get older and tend to grow in our faith, it seems like those firsts tend to start going away. And it seems like we get more to, you know what, I'll just sit back and watch. Or I'll just wait until something comes to me. Or this one's where I think it normally goes is, you know, honestly, I haven't thought about my faith in a while. So, when it comes to firsts in our journey with Jesus, when we stop experiencing those firsts, we stop really experiencing God in a new way. Like, if you read in Psalms, it tells us His mercies are new every single day. It doesn't say that they're refilled. It says that they're new. He has something new and greater and bigger and better for us every single day. So it may be the first time you read through Romans and, like, this certain verse stuck out. I mean, I have conversations with people all the time. I was having one Monday night, reading through John. I've read through John and even heard this story probably 1,000 times in the 30 years I've been a Christian. And I never saw this thing. It was the first time I'd ever seen this before. So when we stop experiencing those firsts, we stop truly experiencing God. So we're going to look at a guy for the next 2 weeks. Probably one of my favorites biblically because he reminds me a little bit of me. Okay? His name is Peter. Okay? Now, yeah, we know a guy named Peter too. So, Peter experienced a lot of firsts with Jesus, and God used him in major ways. Peter's outspoken. He's kind of a loudmouth. A lot of times, he's the first one to speak and the last one to think. Okay? So, it tended to get him in trouble. Okay, let me give you a couple of examples. Good thing, Peter's the first one to follow Jesus, or one of the first four to follow Jesus. Simple and easy. He was the first one to declare Jesus the actual Messiah. Of all the disciples, he was the first one. He was the first to follow Jesus after he got arrested. And then there's this one. He did this frequently, but the one example, he's the first to speak without thinking. He literally looked at Jesus and told Jesus he was wrong. You're stupid. Okay? But that's Peter. His brain runs way slower than his mouth does. So, we're going to Matthew 14. That's where we're headed. Matthew 14. That's in the Bible. I will tell you what verse in a minute. The Bible, it's that blue book that's in your chair. It's got all the words in it. Sometimes they're in red. Okay. Matthew 14. Matthew 14. 14. 1-4. You've got to flip so far. Me too. But I still got to like sit here and do this thing or people get mad at me. All right, starting in verse 22. So, here we go. It says, that's not the right one. Hang on. No, we're good. I'm going to, immediately after this, immediately after what? What happened before? Oh, he feeds the 5,000. So, they've literally just watched Jesus take a Happy Meal and turn it into food for 5,000 people. Okay, so immediately after this happens, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. After sending them home, he went up into the hills by himself to pray, and night fell while he was there alone. I love this part. So Jesus gets done feeding the 5,000, tells everybody to go home, tells the disciples to get on the boat, and he goes to pray. Like, if Jesus himself, while he was here on earth, needed to go pray, how much better do my quiet times need to be? Like, seriously, this guy is one with God, and he still needs to take time to pray. So, again, don't forget, just fed the 5,000 people. Verse 24, meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from the land, for a strong wind had risen, and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came to them, walking on the water. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost!" So let me see if I get this right. You just watched Jesus take a Happy Meal, turn it into food for about 20,000 people, and you're scared of a storm. What? So the 5,000 was basically the count of men. Women and children didn't actually get counted. So if you make a little assumption, there's basically a family of 4, it's about 20,000 people. So, yeah. Here we go. You're afraid of a storm. Does this make sense to anybody else? All right. So verse 27. Jesus spoke to them at once. "Don't be afraid," he said. "Take courage, I'm here." So here's Peter. Remember, mouth goes off faster than the brain. Peter called out to him, "Lord, if it's really you," because you guys can walk on water, right? So who else is walking on water? Nobody. It's either Jesus or it's not. All right, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come out to you, walking on the water." Jesus looks at him with nothing else. And he says, "Yes, come." So Peter speaks up. He's the first one. "Hey, whatever. Mouth running, brain not. First one to reach out, first one to step out of the boat." What happened when Peter said, "Jesus, I want to come out to you"? He told him. He said, "Come on." Trip. He got to be the first part of the miracle and experience something that the rest of the disciples didn't. They're sitting in the boat flipping out, and Peter's like, "I'm going to walk on water. Watch." Peter gets to be the first. Anytime we experience a first with Jesus, he tells us to come. Always. There's nothing else that goes along with it. It's like, come if, come but. It's always Just come. That's all he's asking you to do. So my question to you is this: when was the last time you heard Jesus look at you and tell you in your life to come? Just flat out said, hey, you're pursuing me in this direction. Come on, I got you. Or are we not hearing him say it because we're not asking? Or are we not listening? See, sometimes we let our brain get in the way of what Jesus wants to do for us. Down to verse 30. Well, finishing the back half of 29. It says, so Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water towards Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, see, here's the brain. His mouth went off, and here the brain kicks in. He saw the strong wind and the waves, and he was terrified and began to sink. Save me, Lord, he shouted. Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him. You have so little faith. Why did you doubt me? Again, just fed 20,000 people with a Happy Meal. Just walked on water, and some way, somehow, he doesn't think that Peter can, or that Jesus can sustain him on the water. Why does he doubt him? 32, when they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped. Then the disciples worshipped him. You really are the Son of God, they explained. So they immediately began to worship. So when we experience these things in our lives, we have no choice but to worship. We don't have any option but to turn to God and say, you really are the Son of God. So when it comes to stepping out, doing first, being the first one there, there's a ton of things we can talk about. I want to focus on one tonight, okay? I want to talk about talking to somebody, a friend, a family member, somebody about Jesus for the first time, okay? Again, just remember, if we truly stop experiencing first, we stop experiencing God. So what keeps us from stepping out of the boat and doing something new? Fear, okay? What stops us from stepping out of the boat and doing something new? All right, Ivy's the only one. Everybody else jumps out the boat. Got it. So, my first thought is complacency. We get too busy being a part of the status quo. Just being part of everything else. We're so used to our routine. We get up every morning, we go to school. Some of us go to work. We come home, we do our homework, we eat dinner with the family, we do the rest of our homework, and we go to bed. Every single day, 5 days a week, with no break, everything stays the same. And what we miss is that people are sitting there passing us by who are dying eternally. And we're so focused inside our schedule that we don't see any of them. See, it's real easy for us to sit in church and be like, I love people and I don't want anybody to go to hell. And yet when we walk out these walls, we have these blinders on. And we don't talk to anybody, we don't see anybody, we don't think about anybody else doing anything else. See, if we're not careful, even starting now, even in September, we're worried about finishing the year out well. Whether it's 2018 or the school year, we're more worried about finishing the year out well than we are about where people are going for eternity. I mean, literally, right outside these doors, people are driving by, walking by, and they're going to spend eternity in hell apart from God. And we're going to leave out of church and go on our own way and not care. We've got people in each and every one of our lives that we know. I mean, God has sat there and just nagged at you, and you know that feeling. Hey, you should really say something. Hey, you should really speak up here. And we just sit there. Maybe it's out of the fear, like Ivy spoke of. Maybe we don't want to get told, hey, you're an idiot, shut up. But Jesus' last words to his disciples before he leaves and goes to heaven, we call it the Great Commission. I think in the Christian world, in the church world, we take it as the great suggestion. I think that's where we sit. Or the great, if the opportunity perfectly presents itself and the stars align and I have nothing else to talk about. Or even my personal favorite, I'll get around to it one day. But that's not what Jesus did. He said, this is the last command that I leave to you. Nothing else. The second reason that we stay in the boat is comfort. Is it uncomfortable to tell people about Jesus? Heck yeah, it is. It is scary. Because you are going to get rejected. People are going to slam the door in your face. They're going to show you things you don't want to see. They're going to tell you things you don't want to hear. It is uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to invite people to church. Do you agree? Yes. You know how I know that? Because this room ain't full. Buddhist people need to be in this room. But so the long and short of it is, inside our comfort, we care way more. We care way more about what it is that we have to say than what God's trying to tell us in this message. That's where we're at. We care way more about what we think is important than what God's telling us in the Word. That's why we keep running our mouths. But if we walk out these doors, I promise our mouths don't keep running. They shut up. Yet if I told every one of you, get out of this room and go tell somebody about Jesus, you're all going to go run and hide. So unless you've got something better to say than what God's trying to tell you, please shut up. Because like I said, there's people out there that are burning in hell and we're sitting in here cracking jokes. And we think it's funny. The God of the universe is sitting here trying to talk to you and you think you have something better to say. And if that's really the case, then I totally get it. Please go down to the prayer room and talk to yourself. Because you're distracting somebody else that needs to hear what's going on. Because it's not just you that you're interrupting. See, that's where our comfort sits. That's where our comfort plays. Is we're so comfortable, we think we know everything that's in this book that we don't need to hear what's going on. We care more about our reputation than we do about telling people about Jesus. That's why this room's not full. Because we're more worried that somebody is going to make fun of us than that people are burning in hell. See, I'm looking at, what, 3, 5, 7, 8 shirts back there on the wall? Roughly probably an average of 800 to 1,500 kids at each school. So my real quick math adds up to about 10,000 people that God's put us in a place to try and reach. And some reason we can't get 50 in this room. And I know one of you's got a really good excuse why, right? They all said no? Their mom said, all 10,000? Okay. All right. So, where in our lives have we gotten complacent? Where have we decided that we would rather keep doing what we're doing and not want to step out of our normal routine to do something that might create God to show up in a new big way? School? Your friends? Maybe your family. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever experienced what happens when a family member really comes to know Christ, but that is crazy. Like, you're sitting there talking about it, and you're like, man, I cannot stand my parents. They treat me like crap, whatever. What that parent needs is Jesus. And watch if that relationship doesn't flip. But we're too worried about what our parents might think or what our parents might do. Because, see, their parents say, no, you're right, Ivy, I've been there before. But they could spend the night at your house on a Saturday night and then just come to church with you. I've watched teenagers get saved and go home and their entire family get saved within the next couple of months. I mean, I know it works. Because Ethan's been trying to get Travis to come to church for how long now? Like 2 years? Okay, so longer than that. What'd you do? Two, 3 weeks ago? Hey, why don't you come stay the night at my house? We'll go to church in the morning. They had a sleepover. It was fun. They painted each other's nails, and they came to church in the morning. It wasn't so crazy out of his comfort zone. That's things he normally, he's going to sleep, and he's going to come to church. So why are we so terribly afraid to just be like, hey, maybe it's because we're too busy inside our comfort zone. We're too comfortable with where things are at. Maybe, and this may be a reach, maybe we're too comfortable with where this group is at that we don't want to bring anybody new and mess up a dynamic. Yep. Dang, I wish I had that video queued up. You weren't... So here's the deal. Those of you that were at camp know exactly where what I'm about to say. Those of you that weren't, they showed a video of a bunch of guys getting baptized. They're getting baptized in this, like, little bitty box thing. I'm telling you, they were, like, scrunched up while they're getting baptized in this thing. What made this baptism different is that while they were being baptized, they were in handcuffs. Because it was a baptism service in jail. So our speaker is sitting on this side of there's a middle spot there. So almost like this, and there's a viewing thing over there too. So he's sitting on this side, and one of his friends is sitting over there. And every once in a while, a guy would come up, and he'd get baptized, and the guy on the other side of the room would look at him, and he'd just point, you know, that's one. And he'd write his name down. A little bit later, another guy would come up, and he'd point, and he'd say, that's one. So he'd write his name down. So after we're done, Kenny, the guy that was speaking, he went up, and he goes, dude, what are you talking about? He goes, those are guys that are renouncing their gang to follow Jesus. He goes, there's a 99% chance, because they're in the Mexican mafia, they will not make it through the night. But they're taking a stand, and they're deciding that they're going to make a profession of faith for Christ right there in front of every single person, knowing 99% chance their life ends there. The rest of them probably are going to walk out of that baptismal pool and get what they call black eyes for Jesus. Because people are going to make sure that they know you left the gang, and we don't approve. So, while I hear the reasons and I understand them, and I walked them, guys, like I walked through Fossil Ridge High School as a Christian, telling nobody about Jesus. I stand there and I watch these guys that knowingly are about to die. And all I can do is sit here and say, what's your excuse? And I don't say that to be a jerk. I'm just sitting here wondering, like, I've got two examples here. Prisoners that know. I mean, their life is over. It's done. And I've got another example here of a guy who showed up, walked out of heaven, had everything in the world, and died for you. And we do nothing about it. It's just a joke. It's like, hey, I showed up at church. I did my part. God, thanks for letting me into heaven. I got fire insurance. Like, what would happen if we actually decided that we wanted to be thankful for Jesus and what he did and decided we actually loved him and would do what he said? Like, I'm not going to promise you that at some point in your life down the road, you're not going to be persecuted. Actually, truth be told, I'm going to guarantee you that you will be persecuted. You know how I know? Jesus said they're going to hate you because they hate me. So anybody that tells you that Christian life is going to be lollipops and gumdrops is a liar. It's going to be hard. You've all seen the news over the last couple of years, whether it was on social media or on the news or whatever. But they're lining people up in the Middle East and just slaughtering them right there. For what? All because they looked them in the face and they said, hey, are you sure you want to be a Christian? Yep. Boom. And we're like, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to be a part of that. So why is it that everybody else in the Bible and in jail and in the countries where it's straight up illegal, why is it that they're willing to stand for Jesus and we can't get off our butts? Well, because we're self-centered. Self-centered, focused on us. We're more worried about what life has to offer me. See, here's the part of that that really sucks. There's going to come a time and a place where life really is going to be all about you. There's going to come a time and a place where if that's the life that you choose to live, that you're going to be surrounded by complete and total darkness with nobody else around, with nobody to talk to, nobody to cry out to, and you're going to get to live the life that's all about you in the fiery pits of hell. If we decide we want to live a life that glorifies God, then we get to live that life for eternity. Jesus asks us, choose this day whom you're going to serve. Are you going to serve you, or are you going to serve him? Because the decision that you make is going to last for eternity. You guys can head off to small groups.